grasping reality through fiction. And all we're going to do today, I hope we can talk some about novels we all like, too. And what I've done is give you a list of some that I think are important. But I want to talk a little bit about the title I have and why I'm calling it that. I'll admit right here that I read a lot more novels than I read theology. And I get a lot of theology out of the novels I read. And the one thing that's really important about reading novels is that a good novelist will give you a perspective on the world that you didn't have before. It's like opening new windows. There's a novelist, Walker Percy, who I was going to put down here, and I'll add some of his books later then, who also wrote a collection of essays called The Message in the Bottle, which talks a lot about writing and language and all kinds of things. And one thing he says that in there is that the modern novelist is always on the brink of the abyss, ready to fall in. Some of us might be a few hundred yards away from the brink of the abyss. But the modern novelist is always right on the brink, ready to fall in, looking at both the abyss and what's behind and what's all around. And so by reading novels, we're able to get a clear picture both of the dark side of life and the brighter side of life. And also many novelists are able in a very, some of them do that kind of, okay, some of them do sort of a larger kind of scheme where you get a better perspective on the whole world, sort of like using, they sort of like almost give you a telescope to look out. Then there are some novelists that sort of work like microscopes, you know, and by narrowing in on the tiniest things of life, help you sort of lift things out and look at those and see everything that's part of your daily life and how that does. There's one novelist on here I'll talk about right now. In the middle of your page, there's a gal named Barbara Pym, P-Y-M, and I've listed her 10 novels. Barbara Pym was twice voted. Has anybody ever heard of Barbara Pym? Oh, Joanne, you have. Have you read her? Huh? Which ones have you read?
Excellent Women, The Day the Dove Died.
Sweet Dove Died, yeah. Aren't they great books? Yeah. And Barbara Pym's one of the microscopic kind of writers. And she was twice voted the most underrated novelist of the decade in England in the 50s and the 70s. She worked for a journal called Africa, which is it's an anthropological journal of the International Africa Society in London. And so almost all her books have anthropologists in them somewhere. And that's kind of fun. But the one thing that's really fun about it, especially for people involved with the church, if you're involved with the church at all, you will laugh right out loud at Barbara Pym. Most of her characters are single women who are involved with their parish church and all the kinds of things that go on. And it's incredible kind of stuff. It's the kind of book, you turn a page and you read something. She often has like this person is thinking such and such about another person, you go, oh, I didn't think anybody ever thought that, you know, except for me. And they're very revealing and a lot of fun. Her writing is very simple, very clear, and they're the kind of books that if she wasn't such a good writer, you'd get real bored on about the second page. Because they are not your tremendous plots, you know, that have some kind of a great surprising ending and five people die and three people get married and, you know, there's a big explosion, you know, none of that stuff. It isn't any kind of a remarkable plot at all. It's just the daily lives of all these people. And their lives look very much like yours and mine, asking the same kinds of questions. You know, when is it? People hardly waiting, they can hardly wait for their lunch hour so they can get out of the office for that and all kinds of things. All of them are very good. There's 10 of them. And but I'd recommend that if you're going to, Excellent Women is in the Holden bookstore. And all these books are available in paperback. You can find them in most bookstores right now. And they'll probably be in your local library as well. She sort of had a resurgence. She died in 1980 in an automobile accident, which was unfortunate. She was about 60. Otherwise, she probably would have kept writing. But if you're going to read just one, read Excellent Women. If you're going to read two, you might want to go to Quartet in Autumn next. Share with somebody right now, and I can give you another one afterwards, and if there's still some that wants some, we can get some more runoff during lunch, okay? But maybe you want to look on with someone and see what's going on. Anyway, Barbara Pym, I highly recommend to you. She's delightful, she's funny, she's revealing, and she'll give you really a whole new outlook on life. And I think men will enjoy them as much as women. I know they do. I mean, a lot of it's sort of written from a woman's perspective, but you learn a great deal about it, and they're a lot of fun. I'll just go through some of these other authors and talk about some other things. If you want some really, you'll know sort of by looking at this, with one exception, two exceptions on this list. Well, three if you look at the authors at the bottom. Almost everyone's an English author. And that's why I want some of you to participate later. I'm really trying to be better and read some American authors now, but I have a real affection for English authors myself, so I do that. If you want some just really funny, light reading, do any of you really like Jane Austen? Some of you really have. Yay, everybody likes Jane Austen. Barbara Pym has been called the modern-day Jane Austen, and her novels are very similar to that. They are describing the manners and mannerisms of her day. Another one that's sort of in that style, that is in poking fun at people's manners, another side of Jane Austen, is Angela Thirkell. That's the one right under Barbara Pym there. Angela, that is her real name, too, by the way. Angela, some people are like, Thirkell? That's got to be made up. Angela Thirkell wrote basically in the 30s and 40s in England, and these are her six books. And all they talk about are the English gentry in the countryside. And she's made up this little county in England called Barsetshire. And they're called the Barsetshire Chronicles, the whole series. And they're not really a series. You can read any one, but they're just hysterical. Just a riot. I had major surgery in May, and Mary Hinderly brought me an Angela Thirkell novel to get me through it. And the only problem was it was abdominal surgery, and I had to stop reading one because it was too funny, and it still hurt to laugh, so I had to wait a couple weeks in order to do it. They're really funny, and especially if you really like English stuff, you'll really like these. But even if you don't like a lot of English things, the Angela Thirkell novels are great light reading. You know, when you just need something to... They're not great novels. You know, she's not a great novelist at all. But they're just delightful and a lot of fun. Same way on the line of a lot of fun, next one, Peter Ustinov, Dear Me, that's his autobiography. Has anybody read that? I don't know. I really like Peter Ustinov. Maybe you do too. But it's an interesting book for a lot of reasons. One, he's done a great many things in his life. Two, it gives you some real perspectives on England during World War II. Much of the book is about that period. And some of the things he did, he was involved with the Ministry of Information and the Army making patriotic films, you know, that people would see in the theaters to encourage their participation in the war effort at home. And he talks about making one of these in Northern Africa. And he had to play, they were in Northern Africa, and he had to play an English person who lived there and owned a cafe. And they had gotten all these locals in to sit in the table so it looked realistic, you know. And he was up there doing his thing, he said, and they said, speak Arabic. And he says, I can't speak Arabic. And if any of you know Peter Ustinov, he can mimic anything. Any language he can mimic very, very well. And they said, oh, come on, you know, just make something up, go along. So we started walking through the table with this fake Arabic. And after about four sentences, all the Arabs got up and left. Left the tables and walked across the road. And they went over and tried to get him back, and they wouldn't come back. They were furious. And so finally, they got one of them who spoke a little English, and he said, well, the man offended us. And Peter said, I had no idea what he was saying. And it turned out that he had called them, what was it, mouse turds, I think. And it turned out that the problem was not the turd part, but the size of it. If he'd called them camel dung, they would have stayed. You know. Anyway, it's full of little anecdotes like that, and it's just a delightful book. Just that's another kind of light reading kind of thing, but also it'll give you a lot of very interesting perspectives on, especially World War II, and some interesting perspectives on acting in the film industry and stuff. And like I say, he is just really funny, and that's a lot of fun. Okay, there's one American author down here, at least, a couple actually, Thornton Wilder. How many of you read Wilder? You all know Our Town, right? How many of you have read at least one of the novels? What? Which ones? Bridge of St. Louis Ray? The others. Wilder has the same kind of microscopic ability that, like, Barbara Pym, although it's a little more, his style is certainly more florid, and he definitely is, you know, one of the great authors of our century in America. And if you haven't read these novels by Thornton Wilder, I would highly recommend you do. Mary's got a bunch, has all these in the bookstore, and she'd love to move them out. So if you want a good novel, not move them out, she'd like to get more, but... I told Mary I'd sell her some books today, too. But Thornton Wilder's wonderful. My particular favorite is Theophilus North, which is a story of a school teacher, sort of tennis pro, a bunch of other things, in the 20s in New England, and just sort of his journey through coming out of college and doing these things. And they're amazing books in how they describe the emergence of our life in America. Now, Wilder wrote at the beginning part of this century, but... the kinds of reflections he makes on American society are extremely important for us in our end of the century as well, in seeing some of the beginnings of where we are now in terms of our affluence, in terms of wanting a lot of security and wanting a lot of things and all that. Wilder does that very well. The Eighth Day is a classic, and that's a really good one, too. That isn't the Odes of March, it's the Ides of March. which is Wilder's rendition of the death of Julius Caesar. And a fascinating, fascinating thing. The Woman of Andros is a wonderful little statement about a Greek woman and sort of some struggles along those lines. And all it making. Wilder liked that a lot. He uses a lot of classical allusions in his novels. And like in The Ides of March and The Woman of Andros, actually uses classical situations to make a point about modern times. And they're very good and very, very readable. Some others, J.B. Priestley, I stuck down there at the end. Have any of you read Priestley? Nobody's read J.B. Priestley? Not at all? Oh, do you have a treat in store? J.B. Priestley's also an English author. He's too prolific for his own good, but he's written like 30 novels. And I put down four of them. They're great fun. The Good Companions is his most famous novel. That's readily available in any bookstore, and I'm sure at your library. And they're just wonderful stories. The Good Companions is a story about a bunch of old vaudeville actors, or music hall actors in the English scene, who get together and form another. They're all down and out and broke and real characters, and they get together and form another company, which eventually makes it. But and they're the Good Companions. And it's just wonderful reading. Festival at Farbridge is... comes from the Festival of Britain, which I think was in about 1952 or 53. It's about this town called Farbridge where they all get together to plan what they're going to do for the festival. And it's also a great book. The Image Men's probably the best one. It's a two-volume work. In most library editions, it's in one volume. It's about these two old aging professors. Well, they're not so old. They're in their mid-50s, I guess. But they've both been teaching overseas all their lives. Owen Tooby has been in the Far East teaching English. Cosmo Saltana has been in South America teaching philosophy, and they meet back together in London, and by a sham end up being the Institute for Social Imagistics, which they make up at the last minute in order to get some money out of a widow. it's a long story. But what Priestley's poking fun at in The Image Men is our whole, everything is what we see on the surface. We're always trying to build images all over the place. What they end up doing is splitting up and building images for two political candidates who are running for the same thing. They're both leaders of their parties, so they're both after the prime minister job, and they end up making them look exactly alike. You know, it's just, but the image, I've read The Image Men three times, both volumes. It's just a hysterical book, and says some really true things about our society. Low Notes on a High Level is about... a composer who's developed, I can't remember the name of the instrument. It's an instrument, he made up his own instrument, and it hits the lowest note possible in the orchestra, and then there's some kind of a hoo-ha. A friend of his was a conductor who they had a fight with over some kind of a game about 30 years before, wants to perform the symphony, and the guy won't give up the instrument, you know. But it's really funny. It's worth it for a whole description of what Schnapp Sunlight is. I won't tell you anymore. Those of you that are Scandinavian would appreciate that book. There's a whole lot of stuff about Scandinavians drinking schnapps and aquavit in there. Anyway, Priestley, any book you find by J.B. Priestley will be worth your time. And it's also good, some good light reading. Now we'll go to some heavy reading again. Up at the top, the second one from the top on the paper, John Fowles. Has anybody read any John Fowles? What have you read? French Tennis Woman, probably.
Daniel Martin.
What, Daniel Martin? You've read all of them. Yes. And aren't they wonderful?
I like that Daniel Martin.
You didn't like Daniel Martin?
Yeah.
What was the problem with it?
It was work to get through there. You couldn't get a focus on it. I mean, there are parts of it I love.
Yeah. I think Daniel Martin is really the book of the 70s.
Really?
Yeah. It's, there's some backup for that, too. Some various critics said the same thing, too. Some of us, we thought we were real good. Some friends of mine and I decided, that's the book of the decade. And then we read it also in some reviews later, and we thought, oh, we were right. No, but Daniel Martin is a little hard to get through, but in terms of being precisely descriptive of the kinds of sort of crises that individuals go through as a result of our times, it's hard to beat. Really hard to beat. And it's big, it is kind of hard to get through. My recommendation is if you read Daniel Martin, skip the first chapter, start at the second chapter, read the whole book, and go back and read the first chapter. Okay? The first chapter, do you remember that first chapter where he talks about being a boy in all the fields and all the green stuff, and there's all kinds of images and stuff, you have no idea what's going on. And but if you start at chapter two, that's really where the story starts. Then read the whole book, go back and read the first chapter, and you'll understand the first chapter. And then you won't get slogged down in the first chapter either. But Daniel Martin, I think, is a really important book that you should read. I've just been rereading The French Lieutenant's Woman because I want to see the movie. And I was trying to make sure I've got the book read before I see what's going on. And I read it 10 years ago for the first time. And right now, the book is having a terrific impact on me. The kinds of things in French Lieutenant's Woman, when he makes his little asides about historical perspective on various things, I mean, everything from sex to economics and all kinds of stuff. It is a terrific lesson in modern history. It's just incredible. I find myself, usually I don't read a novel with a pen, but when I got into French Lieutenant's Woman again, I've been underlining stuff, and dude, I used part of it in a sermon the other day. I didn't tell anybody where it was from, but a couple weeks ago, but it's just, if you haven't read The French Lieutenant's Woman, that's in the bookstore as well. You really should. It's really an incredible book. The rest of them are all good, too. The Collector and the Man. The Collector is one to be read on a bright, sunny day when you're feeling real good. Wouldn't you agree? It's real depressed. It's real scary, yeah. But it's good. And if you're interested especially in psychopathic criminals, you'd be interested in The Collector. The Ebony Tower, the stories are very good in there. The Magus, there are two editions of The Magus. Fowles himself has revised it about 3 years ago. And read either one. They're both good. They're both still out. The Magus is a real interesting book. It's hard to describe. Has anybody read Hermann Hesse, much Hermann Hesse? Some. The Magus is a lot like, now I can't remember the name of the book. Siddhartha, Damien, no. The one about, something about a game.
The Bead Game.
The Bead Game, yeah. It's a lot like The Bead Game of Hesse. So if you know Hesse.
I have read it many times.
What?
I didn't understand
what
I was reading.
The Magus? Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it caught me. And I had to stay with it. And then I went back and read the first part and understood it. I mean, I couldn't. I was the same.
Yeah.
And because you were constantly being fooled.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm going to try and read the revised edition again and see if that's a little better.
I'd like to see it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun.
But Fowles is worth your time. I think everybody would agree with that. And we're talking about some of the problems, but he's definitely worth your time. He's really one of the great, great authors of our century, especially this half of it, and really worth your time. Okay, back to some lighter stuff at the top. Amanda Cross. This is another, I just discovered her, sort of. I mean, that was somebody handed me one of these in the hospital, too. What you're getting is what I read while I was sick for 3 weeks. Not completely. But Amanda, there's a lot of murder mystery stuff. And Amanda Cross is an American mystery writer. Her real name is Carolyn Heilbrun. She teaches English at Columbia University. Have you read Amanda Cross? And I thought, when I saw that, I said, Carolyn Heilbrun, where do I know that name? And then it occurred to me, and those of you that have been in my Sayer sessions and things like that, at the beginning of the Harper and Row edition of the Lord Peter stories, or at the end, there's an essay entitled Sayer's Lord Peter and God that was written by Carolyn Heilbrun. And then I thought, I've seen it someplace else too. And she has an introduction to all the three of the Vera Brittain books, those of you that sat in on that session that I did earlier in the week. And I thought, oh my word, this woman reads everything I read. And it's true, she quotes all my favorite poets and everything. I mean, it's like, you know, I have to write to this woman and say, where is it? And I'm really excited to find an American woman writing really good mystery novels in the English style. And she really is. She borrows wholesale from Dorothy L. Sayers. I've started marking these books up and saying, this paragraph came from Gaudy Knight, and this paragraph. And I think it's probably unconscious just because she knows Sayers so well. But they're in that style. They're really interesting, like Death in a Tenured Position. I just put these all in alphabetical order. Death in a Tenured Position, the whole plot, and this won't be giving it away, but the whole plot is based on how you read one poem by George Herbert. You know, there's two ways of reading it, two ways of interpreting it, or maybe three or four. And the whole plot turns on the interpretation of this one poem. Yeah.
Is that one in paperback?
Yes, they're all in paperback. Yeah, they're all in paperback. And also Poetic Justice has quotes from W.H. Auden all the way through. And it's just, they're terribly literate. They're wonderful. Kate Fansler, the detective who also teaches English at a New York university, is really a wonderful character. She's just great. And if you want some good mystery reading, Amanda Cross is really fine. I hope Ms. Heilbrun's going to write a few more.
What's your real name?
Carolyn Heilbrun, Heilbrun. While we're on murder mysteries, we'll hit some of P.D. James. You know P.D. James, some of you? What have you read, Carolyn?
Innocent Blood.
Now, isn't that quite a book? What'd you think of it?
Very strange. It was a cold book. I admired her style and it gave me a lot to think about, but it was a strange book.
It is. It's a very strange book. You should know that P.D. James worked for Scotland Yard for 20 years, and she worked in the area that dealt with psychopathic criminals. And out of that, and out of also, she's very much, Dorothy L. Sayers is also a great mentor of hers, and she quotes at the introduction to, there's a volume called Crime Times 3 that has three novels by P.D. James in it, and she talks about, at the beginning of that, the great influence Sayers had on her. And P.D. James is probably the real queen of mysteries right now. Her books, like the Sayers books, are very much novels in themselves. Innocent Blood is the last one. That's about the fourth one on your list there. And she hasn't written any more. And it's not really a mystery. It's a description of a psychopathic criminal case, a murder situation, and one girl's who has some history of it. It's a lot. I won't give you the whole story. But it's worth reading. We're getting so much of that in our time. That P.D. James, from her experience in working with these people, has written I think the novel is intentionally cold, Carolyn. I think it's intentionally cold. It's literally meant to put a chill down you. Yeah.
It's cold so much, it's just that it has reality.
Yeah, okay.
That's real reality, but it's the moving of the life through the various experiences and changing perspectives.
Uh-huh.
She went through these things.
Yeah.
It's so real.
It is very, very real. Yeah, Lola has done another statement.
The reason that I thought it was cold is that I generally tend to
yes.
Very methodical, and that just made me
chilled right down to your bones. Yeah, right. This Innocent Blood is another one for a bright, sunny afternoon when you're in a good mood. But it's a wonderful book. And then the others listed there are her murder mysteries, or they're not all murders. I mean, that's everybody that follows the Sayers model doesn't always have a murder, which is nice. They're often other kinds of mysteries. And they're really good. Very, very, very good. Just in themselves as novels, they're very good. They're all good. Joanne, you'd probably enjoy An Unsuitable Job for a Woman. It's a good one. let's see if I hit all these. I put some more mystery-type people, just some authors at the bottom of the page. Nicholas Blake, that's not Nicholas Blake. I'm typing, it's not whether I'm a pastor or not a secretary. Nicholas Blake is the pen name for the poet C. Day Lewis. Anybody know C. Day Lewis? He's fairly famous. He was poet laureate in England and some other things. And he's written a whole series of terrific mysteries. Really fine. And you'll find those in your local bookstore. There's about, 15, 16 of them. And they're very, very good. Niall Marsh, anybody read Niall Marsh? You don't? She's a New Zealander. That's why she has a funny name. And who has written, her mysteries are just terrific too. And there's about 25 of them. So if you want to get going on a real good author that's going to give you a nice long time of enjoyment, Niall Marsh is a good one. my criterion for reading for a good mystery is whether or not you can read it again. I love to read novels again and again and again and again and again. And Agatha Christie isn't readable again. You read it once and that's it. All of these people are, you can read them again. They're worth having in your show. Marjorie Allingham is also very good. She's back in the same genre as Christie and Sayers and Chesterton. She's about the same age as them. There's a story about once the Sayers and Allingham took a train journey together. That's about all they met each other. But she was in the Detection Club also with the rest of them. She's a little bit younger, but not much. Have anybody read Marjorie Allingham?
I read it years ago, and then started rereading, and noticed that I'm aware of a lot of sexism and racism and stuff in her books that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. You have to, anytime you read a pre-World War II English novel, you're going to get a lot, you're going to get some, and it's just, they're just reflecting the culture in which they live. You're going to get some anti-Semitism, you're going to get some racism, especially towards blacks, and a lot of sexism. And, you know, just don't get mad or be upset. Just remember, just look at the, you know, look at the verso of the title page and find out what date the play thing was written and just go for it. Oh, yeah, Sayers was. Allingham's pretty bad that way sometimes. But they're real good. They're still real good novels. And don't not read them for that. Just remember their cultural connotation. Has anybody read the William F. Buckley mystery novels, the suspense novels? They're really good. I can't stand Buckley, but these are really good. You know, they're not even pedantic. I mean, you don't even need to run to the dictionary very often, which is hard to believe, but they're really good. Saving the Queen, Stained Glass, Who's on First? And there's one that I haven't read yet because it isn't, it's hard, too hard to get in the library. You know, you have to be on a waiting list of 180 people and it's not in paperback yet. I forget what it's called.
Marco Polo.
Marco Polo if you can, right. Have you read the Buckley books? Yeah, I know. But they're worth reading. Get them from the library. They're really good. When the first one came out, I think that's Stained Glass. You know, I thought, well, I'll give him a try, you know. And it's great. They're really good. And also, he uses, his experience in World War II in the, then I guess that was the OSS, huh? And all his intelligence stuff to make that go. And he uses real historical events. And he is very erudite. He knows the stuff well, and he does that well. And so you get another perspective on all those events, which is really neat. I learn a lot from reading those books. I suppose a lot of you read John Le Carré. Have you? None of you. Who's read John Le Carré? Some people. Those, if you've never read those, they're great too.
Honorable schoolboy.
Honorable schoolboy.
Soldier, spy, Smiley's people.
Those are all part of a series. The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, probably his most famous novel. There are about 10 of them. And he also uses his experience in British intelligence during World War II and after to do, maybe some of you saw Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy on PBS a couple years ago with that wonderful music, that wonderful Nunc Dimittis at the end. That was great. Anyway, I mean, you had to sort of be into that to watch it. I mean, like a lot of the critics said, I mean, if you want to spend, I think there were about six episodes. Six, maybe. Do you want to spend 6 hours watching Alec Guinness take his glasses on and off? You know, put. It's very slow-moving, very detailed kind of stuff, and it's a lot of fun. The Le Carré novels are sometimes a little hard to get through because they are very, very detailed. But he writes very well, and they're good. And if you've never read John Le Carré, you have a real treat in store, I think. Why don't you start? Let's share some authors you guys like a little bit.
You read Jean Stubbs?
No.
British
Okay, but STUBBS, Jean Stubbs?
Yeah, Jean Stubbs. But if you get into the one on his inspector, he's a police person in England, and a middle class, so not the aristocracy at the time, but his work takes him into all the different levels of class there. And interesting relationship to his daughter and his wife. So interesting from the aspect of his view of women.
Great. Yeah.
You were mentioning Americans. This last year, the third of John Updike's trilogy of Rabbit and Katrina, and I read all three of them. They're very good. Each decade, he's written a Rabbit novel.
Right.
And so you have Rabbit in his 20s, Rabbit in his 30s, and Rabbit in his 40s. And it just, I mean, you can sort of see that the way the country's changed, and you see the person growing toward middle age and all those things. The last one is Rabbit is Rich.
Rabbit is Rich. Right. I've read the first two. I haven't gotten Rabbit is Rich yet.
Yeah, it's
not in paperback. Not in paperback yet, right. Gotta wait for that. But those a lot of you read Updike? One thing or another? I think every pastor should read A Month of Sundays. Boy. Okay, Bert and Arnie, if you haven't read A Month of Sundays, better do it. It's really such some of the pressures that the clergy are under in our time, and so it's really worth reading. Yeah.
There's a novel that I read just recently, Davis Grubb, and it's called Night of the Hunter, and I didn't realize that I was reading the book on which the movie with Robert Mitchum was based, maybe 15 years ago, where he was this demented preacher. And it was interesting for me. Usually I read a book and then I go see the movie. But this book is a phenomenal little parable of law and grace and what it's like to be saved by having someone include you in the biblical narrative. These two children are running from this guy who was with their father in prison, and this guy knows that they have $10,000 in some place that their father robbed in a robbery and has since been fried and gone. And how they run from this man with this horrible burden of money, and he uses religion to seduce their mother into marrying him, and then they are alone with this horrible burden of money, and knowing that this man is really only after them. And they run, and they run, and they are like Moses in the bulrushes on the river, and they come to this woman who cares for them, and begins to heal their psychological scars by telling them Bible stories, which include their story. And finally, this guy finds them, and the final climax of the book, and how that all gets resolved. It's beautiful writing, and if anyone ever saw the movie, the story is the same, but it doesn't have the guts of it. It doesn't have the good and evil dilemma. It was only a scare movie, a horror movie. But this has a lot of the gospel in it, a lot of our own personal journey, how we are saved, how we deal with fear, how other people care for us. It's just terrific.
The Night of the Hunter.
The Night of the Hunter.
Davis Grubb.
Davis Grubb.
G-R-U-B-B. For some reason, that just reminded me of another murder mystery. If you've never read The Rosary Murders by a guy named Kienast, K-I-E-N-A-S-T, do it, also on a sunny day, and not during Lent. But it's a great mystery based on the church year. It's just great. I thought of another one, too, that is a note when you're talking about seeing the movie. How many of you got hooked on Brideshead Revisited? Read the novel. It's really worth it. Yeah. Evelyn Waugh. W-A-U-G-H. Brideshead Revisited. What else we got out there?
You like Dick Francis?
Yeah, I like Dick Francis. That's another one.
People and interesting background.
Yeah, Dick Francis is good. What's his, what's that guy's name again, his detective?
Well,
he says... The jockey that burned his arm.
Sid Halley.
Sid Halley, yeah.
Yeah, 15 more.
Sid Halley ones were on public television in the mystery series, yeah. This is also an advertisement for watching public television. Can get you into a lot of good novels. It really can. Oh, I better read this, and you start reading this author and do that.
Why do you feel that we are sort of in the era of the murder mystery or the detective novel or the spy novel as opposed to these big, fat, Hemingway things or Dreiser? What do you think accounts for that kind of resurgence among people who have a theological bent?
Well, I have a couple of reasons, but I think one, just in our whole culture, one reason the detective story is having a resurgence right now is because we have so many problems. And like Dorothy L. Sayers said, you know, a murder mystery is a true escape. You think that all the problems of the world can be solved just like the death in the library. You know, it has a beginning and an end and a resolution, and in almost every murder mystery, you're left with a resolution that's satisfactory to you. And I think that's one reason. And for theologians, I think, for me, theologically, when I want to learn some more things about sin and evil, I read a murder mystery. It really helped. And I think in our culture, we in the church, not just in our culture, but I think our culture has helped us do this, we're afraid to name sin, huh? We're afraid to actually come out and say to ourselves or to somebody else, that's sin. It's such and such a sin. You just did that. That's not right. We're really afraid to do that. It's like Carl Menninger's book of 10 years ago, Whatever Became of Sin. And I think the mystery novels help us rediscover sin. I mean, that sounds sort of weird, but that can be very helpful. Yeah?
Well, to add to that, it seems like in mystery novels, the issue is much clearer. It's clear what is it.
Yes,
and
right.
And a lot of other novels, modern novels, it is not clear at all. And that is very, like, you're at sea all the time trying to decide what is right and what's wrong. The best, one of the best books I've read this year is on a lot of the magazine's best books of 82 list, but like The Sunrise by Robert Stone. But at the end of that book, you have these three characters, a nun, Catholic nun who's part of the freedom movement in some South American country, which you suspect must be El Salvador,
yeah.
and an American CIA-attached academic who has no moral values at all, and the third character is this totally evil person. And they're all kind of meeting in the South American country, and at the end of it,
yeah, right, and a lot of modern novels are that way, too. And once again, I'll repeat that Dorothy L. Sayers quote about the when she was asked about what she thought of the modern novel, and she quipped, "As I grow older and older and totter towards the tomb, I find that I care less and less who goes to bed with whom." And that's, you know, it's a pretty good description of the modern novel. And it's gotten worse, and that's unfortunate. I mean, there are really a lot of things that you start going, you go, "I don't want to read this." And, I think that's one reason. Detective fiction tends to, good stuff tends to be fairly well written, too. And I think that makes a difference. Also because it's very easily contained.
There's a novel called Split Ends.
C-H-A-I-S. Chase?
Yes.
C-H, and it's called Split Ends?
Split Ends, and a male hairdresser.
Oh.
Yeah, and a woman. He's a healing figure for many people.
Huh.
And it's really interesting.
Okay.
Lots of sex, but it's neat too.
Quick, get it! Where is that? Split it. What is it? Well, yeah, some older things, too. We're talking about the modern novel a little bit, too, but I was also a few, not real old books, but if for some just nice reading and good stories, Elizabeth Googe is always nice. Do you know Elizabeth Googe? Some of you know Elizabeth Googe. G-O-U-D-G-E. Several novels. What's your most famous one called again?
Green Dolphin Street, the one that made the movie.
Green Dolphin Street, but there's another one.
The Dean's Watchman, Scent of Water.
Scent of Water, I think. Well, yeah, any of those. They're all really good. Another good author is Rumer Godden. Rumer is R-U-M-E-R. Godden, G-O-D-D-E-N. Probably her most famous novel is In This House of Breed, B-R-E-D-E. It's a great book. It's really wonderful. If you're really into detective fiction, you should read the sort of the father, and it is a male, so he was the father of the detective story, Wilkie Collins, W-I-L-K-I-E, Collins. The Moonstone and The Woman in White. The Moonstone is the first detective novel ever. And Mary has that in the bookstore, I think so, The Moonstone. And they're really good. He wrote the late 19th century. Oh, speaking of late 19th century, is anybody even fun? Anybody read Jerome K. Jerome? Three Men in a Boat or Three Men on the Bummel? Oh, you have a treat in store. Three Men in a Boat is hysterical. The guy's name is Jerome K. Jerome. At home, they called him Luther. There's no real explanation there, but Three Men in a Boat, it's really fun. Yeah. David Wee or Maury Wee?
David,
okay. Oh, speaking, that reminded me. Iris Murdoch. Who reads Iris Murdoch here? Okay. Iris Murdoch. M-U-R-D-O-C-H. Lots of novels. They're very, very good. She teaches philosophy at Oxford. But writes incredible novels, and they're very, very descriptive. Once again, of the kinds of issues that face individuals in a lot of complexity in modern days. One, trying to think of the ones that come to mind. A Severed Head. Wonderful, yeah, real encouraging. The Sea. There are several. There are about 12 of them, I think. And they're just very, very good novels. Somebody else had a hand up back there. Yeah, Kathy.
I think it might be due to the time of my life I'm reading and my age, but I've never read a better novel. Just the impact that it had on me was just incredible. It was about 500 pages in every day. I could not put it down. About two women go through their separate lives first, and the kinds of changes they went through. One went through a divorce, and one got married, and just a lot of the struggle, world changes, and they went through, we were a number of men in the book too that really had a real effect on me too. I think it's good, especially for, I think it would have more an impact on women, though I would love to talk to a man who read it. I just identified with so many of the people in the book. It was scary. I just saw myself so often, so many times, and it was really an incredible book.
Okay, it's Marge Piercy, P-I-E-R-C-Y, Small Changes.
And she's written a couple other books, and I can't remember the name of them. She wrote the 60s, and this takes place in the early 70s.
I just thought of what, yeah.
Thinking of Marge Piercy, another woman writer talks about saying some of the same kinds of issues as Margaret Atwood.
Yeah.
And she's Canadian. But her novel, the most famous one called Surfacing, it's about a young woman who's sort of trying to figure out how she fits into the world, especially how she fits into it. And then there's an edible woman and life before man. And then she has a new one, Bottle Tart. That's brand new. Or the last.
She's got Margaret Atwood, A-T-W-O-O-D. Oh, how many of you have read Walker Percy? Walker Percy is also one of really our great novelists, American novelists, written books like The Moviegoer, for which he won the National Book Award. The Moviegoer. It's on sale in the bookstore, that's right, real cheap. It's a real bargain. If you want a good novel, go pick up The Moviegoer on the sale shelf down. When you walk into the bookstore, when you walk straight in the book part, it's back on the right corner, past the table that has all the theme books on it. The Moviegoer, Lancelot, Love in the Ruins, which is a scream. It's about what happens after the atom bomb comes. I mean, that's not funny, but he makes you laugh and then look at the issues. About this guy in this old abandoned motel with this old, anyway, it's really funny. Love in the Ruins, The Moviegoer, Love in the Ruins, Lancelot. There's two more, and they escape me. Two more. But Walker Percy is worth reading. He's another one who gave you the kind of perspective on modern life that we need to have.
Another book that I think they have still in Picasso that's on sale is David Lopez and his living hearts together. Yeah. David Lopez, every time I go to California, I think, it's all this seedy Hollywood, all these people on the fringes of the movie industry who are just, says it all about that.
It's,
I think, set
in 30s. Yeah. What else? Got some others here? Jack? Okay, time to mention science fiction. Like who? Well, there's some of the real classic kind of stuff, like to get in the... there's a lot of Ursula Le Guin in the bookstore. Some of you read her, like at least The Wizard of Earthsea or something? If you're into science fiction, she's real good. And there's sort of a science fiction fantasy type thing. She lives in Portland, Oregon, has some interesting things to say about life. That's what they need about science fiction, because that's another thing that gives you a whole perspective. In these people and trying to, because, you know, the rules of writing science fiction is that you have to create a universe that's workable. You know, the bad science fiction always has something that doesn't work, or they get too bizarre. So that's what people like, Ray Bradbury, you know, he's the real king of that. Workable universe, and Ursula Le Guin does this in a kind of science fiction and fantasy way, which is really good. Were you waving or?
Oh, you're
scratching your head. Okay. And if you haven't read the C.S. Lewis Space Trilogy, you should. How many of you have read that? That's also in the bookstore. Out of the Silent Planet, Paralandra, and That Hideous Strength. That Hideous Strength, to me, is one of the real terribly descriptive books of sort of the insidious evil in our culture. It will curl your hair and you'll say, yes, that's right. It's really terrific, That Hideous Strength. Some of the other Lewis, we do some, then aside, then we'll get back to science fiction. Lewis, like The Great Divorce, is one of Lewis's novels, which is really good. Till We Have Faces, about the psyche and Aerosmith from Greek mythology, but it's really good. It also says some other things about images. There's another novel. What is it, Kathy? Great Divorce and Help. Oh, there's the Narnia books. Maybe not. C.S. Lewis, and sort of in the science fiction vein, have anybody ever read any of Charles Williams' novels? These are also in the bookstore. Kathy has. Charles Williams, you can't really classify these novels. They are, they're not really science fiction, they're not really fantasy. They're sort of lifting the supernatural out of the ordinary world. I mean, seeing where the supernatural is apparent in the natural everyday life. Williams was the person. C.S. Lewis and the others that had their little group called the Inklings, and Williams was the linchpin of that group. It was around him that they gathered. And these novels are also for sale in the bookstore. In the first sort of cubicle, they're down on the bottom shelf on the right. And they're absolutely wonderful. They're really bizarre. You will start reading and you'll go, what is this? But I can guarantee you that once you start reading, you'll be hooked. And they're exceptionally theological. in really giving a perspective both on the power of evil and also power of good. Every novel has one Christian. I mean, this sounds really corny. It sounds corny to talk about this, but it's not corny at all. There's one Christian in the novel, and it isn't like, say, John Bunyan, where the person's called Christian, or any of this. I mean, and Williams doesn't come out and say, these are my characters, and here is Sophie, who is the Christian in this novel. He leaves you to unravel that as the story goes along. And it's unclear, and I've learned a great deal about making decisions and things like that, and how Christians should operate in the world from the base of the gospel from Williams. They're incredible books. One of the most famous one is called Descend into Hell. And if you're going to read one, read Descend into Hell. although they're all quite good. Another famous one is All Hallows Eve, which also read on a bright sunny day when you're in a good mood. All the rest of them you don't need to do that, but All Hallows Eve you do. Williams' basic theological premise, which is a good one for us, and it's a good one to sort of mention while we're up here in the mountains, is he gives a very, well, not a basic theological premise, beg that, but he talks about the church in terms of a city, using a lot of stuff from St. Augustine, the city of God and stuff like that. But the church, and he uses urban language and in fact, he loves the city. He loved London. He lived in London. And during World War II, he worked for Oxford University Press in London. And he had to move to Oxford, and he just hated it. Because he loved the city. And in a culture where we are so urban-oriented, and we don't know what to do with our cities a lot, Williams will give you a theological perspective on the city that you can use. There's also a collection of essays by Williams that was edited by a woman named Ann Riddler, who worked with him, called Images of the City, and talks about that. And if you like the city, or even if you don't like the city, and you want to learn some new things about the church and stuff like that, read Williams and you'll get excited about the city, I can guarantee you. And it's good stuff for the 20th century. That's Charles Williams. And like I say, it's not really science fiction. Another good science fiction book from olden days is book called A Voyage to Arcturus by David Lindsay. Young man, he died when he was about 30 or something. He had written this one book, and C.S. Lewis sort of discovered it and had it published while the guy was still alive. But it's a real interesting book, A Voyage to Arcturus. I'm just thinking real fast. A couple books, modern novels, if you haven't read them, you should. A Confederacy of Dunces, John Kennedy Toole. How many of you read that? Tried. Sometimes it's hard, but it's really good. This was a book that was sort of discovered by Walker Percy. It's worth it just to go to the library and read Walker Percy's introduction. This John Kennedy Toole died, like when he was 27 or something. Committed suicide, that's right. And his mother insisted on getting this manuscript published, and she took it to Walker Percy and said, will you please read this thing? And Walker Percy said, well, it's the usual kind of thing. He said, you hope you're going to hate it at the first sentence, or at least by the end of the first paragraph, and you can just send it back and say. But he said he found he'd gotten to the end of the first page and was captured. And so he got this book published after this guy's death. And it's an interesting book. It's sometimes a little hard. It's really funny in places. Sometimes it's kind of macabre.
I couldn't get across that kind of humor. I felt so sorry.
It's a black humor. Yeah, right. Yeah, it will really make you think twice about things. Is it Eastern, not Western? Eastern United States or Far Eastern?
Eastern United States, humor, as opposed to Western. And it's quite different even in
life. Yeah, it is very sarcastic.
And that's how the Easterners deal with all their problems.
The Easterner among us speaks. Yeah, right. John Kennedy Toole, T-O-O-L-E. Another one, if you haven't read Morris West, The Clowns of God, do it. That is a great novel. And especially by dealing with the whole nuclear issue. I know we're all nuclear issued to death, but we will be to death if we don't think about it. And The Clowns of God is an enjoyable way to deal with the nuclear issue. Really, Morris West really outdid himself. I think, how many of you read The Clowns of God? Has anybody read The Clowns of God? to my mind, the ending is a bit facile. Have you read it, Joanne? Did you raise your hand? Were you raising your hand? Oh, that was Jack. Oh, I wasn't sure who it was connected to. Anyway, to my mind, the ending of A Clowns of God is a bit facile, but the book is still very much worth reading. It's just captivating. One of those you don't put down, at least I didn't. Any others? Got a couple minutes here.
It's interesting that no one has mentioned John Irving, who's certainly had a lot of success.
Yeah. You like him?
I just thought it was interesting that no one mentioned the Hotel New Hampshire, which has been on the bestseller list.
I had a real tough time with Hotel New Hampshire.
I like it.
I'm still reading it. I started about 4 months ago, and I'm two-thirds of the way through, and they're in wherever they're in Vienna, and I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that's an idea. If you have a lot of hours to devote to your first or second sit-down, that then you really didn't carry yourself
down.
I thought it was gentler than Garp.
Yeah, right. Garp's good, though. Has everybody read The World According to Garp? That's worth reading. That's really good. Another person who's worth reading in terms of short stories, we haven't really talked about that much, is John Cheever, who recently died. And amazing short stories. John Updike's short stories are very good also. Flannery O'Connor, that's another person people should read. Have you ever read her? Yeah.
I was going to mention Flannery O'Connor. If you like a movie where it is apparent where good and evil is, then you might not like Flannery O'Connor, because I think you have to research through her to see where the good and evil is.
Mm-hmm.
She tricks you, and if you're into the culture, you will not understand where she is showing you. Where the evil is.
Yeah, right. It is difficult. Oh, except for one story, I think, of Resurrection. Do you know that story?
Oh, I'm reading her book about her letters. You know, her letters.
The Habit of Being?
Yeah.
That's called The Habit of Being, and it's in the bookstore. And it's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
She talks when she writes that A.
Yeah.
About Resurrection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, read the stories, too. There's collection of stories. Huh? Collection of stories, yeah, but The Habit of Being, the collection of her letters, Flannery O'Connor, is just wonderful. She lived a very sheltered life because she had lupus and could not get around very easily. And so she sort of lived out her life in her stories and in her letters. And they're just wonderful.
An embryonic Dylan's book is The Awakening.
By whom?
That's why you mentioned it, because I never
heard Kate Chopin? Like the composer.
Yes.
She's really trying to deal with herself as a human being in the novel. And they're just bringing it back.
Oh, another great thing that reminded me of an English author of the late 19th century, too, Charles Reade, R-E-A-D-E, The Cloister and the Hearth, which is a wonderful book. Just wonderful. And I've started reading a couple of his other novels I just found at the library, and they're very good. He's very famous for The Cloister and the Hearth. Oh, and also, that reminds me of Speak Cloister in the Hearth. If you haven't read the Sigrid Undset books, if you haven't read Kristen Lavrin's Daughter or The Master of Hesviken, do it.
Indeed.
Right? Everybody get a lot of nods on that one. Undset, U-N-D-S-E-T-H. I think there's an H that gets stuck on it in English.
And then go to Norway.
Right. Kristen Lavrin's Daughter and The Master of Hesviken, H-E-S-T-V-I-K-E-N. Huh?
Three books.
Well, Kristen, you can buy them both in one volume. Kristen Labrador either comes in three separate volumes. They're all through, both books are three volumes. But you can, there are paper cover editions of both Kristen Labrador and The Master of Hestviken, which is a whole separate trilogy, under one cover. They're not too expensive, $5-6 or something. They're worth having. Okay, I don't have anything more.